Ladies and gentlemen, today is the first day of the rest of your life. And now, listen in as Kristen and Johnny bring it all to the table on the Vision Board Podcast.
Guys, welcome back. Episode 169 of the Vision Board Podcast. I'm Tristan Cannell, and alongside me, Johnny Stufko.
What's up, TK? What's up, everybody? 169, who we got?
Got Ben Greenfield, man.
Ben Greenfield, finally. We've been trying to get him on for a while.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting chat. You know, he's not your usual standard fitness professional, do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I've got a lot of respect for him because, for me, looking from an outside in, he just seems so unselfish. The fact that he's willing to perform all these different things on his own body for the greater good of other people. I think it's something that I admire about him.
Interesting. He reminds me a lot of a guy like Tim Ferriss, like a human guinea pig, self-experimentation. He, you know, tracks his results. And it's interesting. I don't want to mention this. It's like, it's not supposed to be a bad thing, but do you think, honestly, it's for the better of other people, or do you think it's just his personal sort of kind of like how he's wired?
I think, well, obviously, you do things for yourself. Everyone's like that.
He was a bodybuilder, right?
You have to. You have to have some sort of, you know, not arrogance. What's the word for it? Well,
inner drive?
Well, something to fulfill yourself.
Yes.
Obviously, there's questions in his own mind that's unanswered. So you're fulfilling your own kind of unanswered questions. But at the same time, I guess, because it's in the health and fitness realm.
Yeah.
It's also a way for him to kind of perform it on himself so other people don't have to do it and then provide the answers. Because he's got a huge audience, a lot of people, you know, he influences a lot of people.
That's right.
So for him, he has to be, you know, spot on what he kind of finds and what he brings to the masses. So I think it's probably a little bit of both, probably a bit of a selfish act, the fact that he wants to fulfill his own desires, but at the same fact, it's a very unselfish fact because he's performing it on himself.
Yes, he you know, you mentioned fitness professional in terms of like not your normal run of the mill. I mean, the guy was a bodybuilder, CrossFitter, endurance. He does, what's he into now?
Into the thing, the Joe DeCena stuff, the Spartan race.
The Spartan race.
Now, professional level.
So they do have that level of like pro athlete. And it just seems like this guy is just wired to the sense of wanting to keep pushing it and pressing it. And it would have been fun in a different dimension to see him in the octagon. You know, he kind of seems like that sort of guy.
Yeah,
that,
maybe.
You know, I think a lot of that sort of cardio-based endurance is more of a masochist sort of mindset of like pain, how much can I put myself through, how good can I get, sort of self-development. And then the story we heard from our boy who went on his property and he was telling stories of like having the mask and the copper wires with the water running through and growing all of his own plants. That's pretty cool.
I
would definitely get down with that, you know, in one way or another, with like having your own livestock and hunting and all that good stuff.
Yeah, it sounds like a pretty awesome sort of way to
live. It's like a mini Rogan.
It's kind of like he lives in, like, for example, from where he was kind of saying where he lives, it's like, well, maybe it was like orange for us in Sydney.
You love orange.
Orange. Are
you guys doing that trip again?
No, we're not. Not yet.
I got caught up.
I'm sure that we will.
But I love orange.
When you think about it, like, he lives in the wilderness.
Washington, right?
2 or 3 hours outside the city. It's kind of like similar to
Washington State, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, rural, open land, beautiful country, that part of the United States. And I'm really intrigued by, I think it's almost becoming like the sexy thing to do. Maybe it's the people I listen to, but grow your own food, hunt your own food, almost being self-sufficient about what's going into our bodies. And I think if you could control as much as you can, it's definitely a good thing. Like if you could take the middleman out of like, it's only been what? It'd be an interesting stat how long it's been since we've been humans to where we go to the market to get packaged meat.
Yeah.
Before, true. Rather than hunting it, it's wrapped in plastic, and we just go and pick it. Oh, that's mine. I'll have that one.
Like, I'll be just too scared to skin it.
I don't know if I could kill anything.
Be too scared.
I don't know if it's fear for me. It's just I have a lot of empathy. I'm kind of a. Yeah. I don't know. I couldn't kill it. Do you know what animism is?
Nah.
Like an animist. I'm not going to say I'm quite an animist, but there are people who won't even kill ants because that organism is alive, and that's a fact. So they think, who am I to end its existence? It's pretty interesting.
I never thought of it that way.
Yeah, and I learned that when I was in the fourth grade, and it's been one of those things that, like, you see Rogan, you see these guys big game hunting, putting pictures up, and it doesn't impress me. I don't know if I could do it. I don't know if I...
Hmm.
Interesting.
Guys, before we get And surprise! On the show, big thank you for everyone tuning in and leaving us 5-star reviews on iTunes. If you haven't yet, please just quickly jump on iTunes and hit the search button, Vision Board Podcast, and there's this review section. If you can leave us a 5-star review, it just helps us grow the show. We can reach more people and we can get more messages out from people like Ben and every other, you know, superstar guest that we've had on.
Excellent. You know, share it with your friends, the Vision Board. We're approaching 200 episodes, 169. It'll be here before you know it. Jump on board.
Yeah, cool. All right, let's get straight to it. Here's Ben Green. All right, guys, our special guest is Ben Greenfield. Ben is one of the most influential people in health and fitness and is a very successful...
Spit it out, man. Influential.
Yes, I'm struggling. I'm struggling already.
I can help you.
Yes, influential. Sir. Influential. And is a very successful athlete who is an ex-bodybuilder, Ironman triathlete, and Spartan racer. He's the author of the New York Times bestseller, Beyond Training, Mastering Endurance, Health, and Life. And he's also a highly sought-after coach and author. We welcome the man, Ben Greenfield. Ben, welcome to the podcast, bud.
Oh, I'm disappointed. I thought you were going to say the man and then say the myth, the legend. Like in the movies.
Oh, man, that's me.
I'm hoping that like a decade from now I will have somehow achieved that status. But for now, I'll take the man. I mean, that's better than a lot of other names you could have called me.
Ben, man, there's time is flying. There's only about... a little over 12 weeks left in 2017. It's a question that Tristan and I ask quite often. With the year ticking down with everything that you're into, is there anything left in this year that you're going after? Any specific goals that you could share with us?
Yeah. what do I got going on? I've got, let's see, what's coming up? I'm headed down to Phoenix, Arizona next weekend to speak to a group of highfalutin financiers about how to live a long time and look good naked. And then while I'm there, I'm going to do a story on sound healing out in Sedona, Arizona, where people like do therapy on you with gongs and didgeridoos and crap like that. And then I'll fly over to Spartan World Championships and compete over there, bringing some members of my team in to do some podcasting and some videos, and I'm personally going to be racing. Then after that, I've got a little bit of an ayahuasca trip with a few friends. And then I'm off to Finland with my family to speak in Finland for a week. That's about mid-October. And I'll come back from Finland and head to Kauai to speak in Kauai with Laird Hamilton and Brian McKenzie and some other folks in this thing called the XPT, which should be pretty sick. Then I'll speak at the Weston A. Price Conference in Minneapolis, which is like a real food conference. Basically, a bunch of old ladies sitting around eating lard and pork and grass-fed butter and learning how to ferment stuff. And then what else do I have going on? Oh, I'll be speaking in New York at a few different events over in New York City. And then I head to Panama for a week-long yoga retreat where I teach nutrition to hot women in bikinis doing yoga. And then I come home. I've got 30 guys coming over to my house to do a mastermind. That's early December. And then we'll finish up that mastermind. I've got one more quick trip after that. It's basically a 7-day-long Iboga experience down in Costa Rica before Christmas. And then my birthday, then Christmas. So that's the rest of 2017.
Wow, the bar is definitely raised.
You need to do more, man.
Yeah, man, what are you doing, dude? You need to definitely start writing goals down. But you mentioned ayahuasca, you mentioned ibogaine. Have you ever done combo?
Both of them together?
Or just combo by itself? Combo.
Oh no, combo. No, sorry, I thought you were talking about the combination of ayahuasca and ibogaine. I've never done combo. Combo is the frog stuff, isn't it?
That's right.
Yeah, well, my buddy, do you guys know Aubrey Marcus from Onnit?
Yeah, he's been on our show. Yeah, we've been down there.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to do it, and he was telling me about his liver enzymes and how high they were and how long they were high after he did it, and it basically kind of – can I curse on this show?
Of course.
Yeah, go for it.
It fucked up his liver. So that kind of like scared me away from doing kombu. So yeah. I don't know. Well, I'm kind of nervous about it.
Yeah, you
know,
well
– I do a lot of
Yeah, Aubrey did.
I do a lot of microdosing with the stuff that's like alkaloids.
All right.
But I'm careful with them because of the liver processing.
Yeah, Aubrey did 17 points on his first time. And literally, you're supposed to probably go 5 or 7 points. But I was only bringing it up because, ironically, of the effects it has, awesome as a detox and a cleanse of the liver and the kidneys and the gallbladder and things like that. But you can't go 17 right up. You can't go 17 right off the bat.
Mm.
I didn't know it had detoxification properties. Sounds more fun than milk thistle extract.
Yeah, it's you're at war. The shamans used to use it. They call it their warrior medicine. But it's an awesome post experience.
Yeah, it's actually interesting that, you know, through the advice of Aubrey that you didn't want to try that, the combo that Johnny just mentioned. Like, you know, you do a lot of extreme things and you do a lot of experiments for the better of other people.
Yeah, but I look at things like in the through the lens of health, right? It's like freaking whatever, like metformin, right? It's great. It's for longevity and decreasing blood sugar, controlling blood sugar, but it's technically a mitochondrial poison. It disrupts your deep sleep cycles. You know, folks in Silicon Valley are popping it like candy.
Yeah.
Or its longevity effects. But there are, like, when I step back and look at something like that, I'm like, if there's some kind of alternative, right, like whatever, bitter melon extract or Ceylon cinnamon or berberine or something like that, then usually I'll go for the safer alternative. However, after hearing your guys' take on combo, I'll do a little bit more research on it.
Yeah, but Ben, just how do you actually, because I love all the stuff that you do. Like, I was reading the other day, you know, you study into algae and things like that and the different how do you pronounce these? I'm struggling this morning.
Well, we gotta keep you away from like the words that are more than two syllables.
Yeah, I'm struggling.
Influential and spirulina have just gotten tossed out the window.
It's gone. But my actual point is, how do you actually select the things that you do want to experiment on yourself?
So it's a combination. I mean, look, like I've been podcasting for like 10 years and I get questions every week sent to me, right? Like 5 to 10 questions that I have to research and find the answer to and respond to on the podcast. And honestly, it's taken me on a journey from like, how do you get a bigger bench press or how do you lose weight more quickly to, you know, what do you think of photobiomodulation or should I try a THC enema? And so in many cases, it's kind of like driven by what my audience is curious about. As they ask questions, I just kind of use myself as a guinea pig, as long as something is something that I don't think is going to kill off an organ, to just try it out for myself. So that's one thing. I read a ton, right? Like I read anywhere from 5 to 7 books a week. Mm. And so often I am trying out things that I discover within what I read because I don't want to be that guy who's just like sitting in my mom's basement, you know, reading or playing on the computer or blogging. I like to get out there and do this shit, right? Like I like to live in the trenches and try things out, see how the body and the brain feels when you try certain things and, you know, see if your dick falls off and flies around the room or if it stays on. You know, so to a certain extent, you know, there are a few things I've done that might be questionable from a health standpoint, but most of the things I've done are pretty healthy. Right? I haven't implanted a lot of things in my body. I haven't messed myself up too much, but it's kind of like a combination of being audience driven and then being driven by the fact that since I was like, you know, 5 years old, I've just like been a total nerd. I just read all the time and I love to try out the things in the books that I read.
Yeah.
Ben, we mentioned Aubrey already, and a couple years ago, I was really fascinated with one of his products, Alpha Brain, and then that led me down the path of like nootropics and urogenics, and then I ended up getting to modafinil. Have you experienced with that stuff?
Yeah, it again, like back to the liver, like there's a little bit of processing by the liver, and honestly, dude, like I like Qualia way better, and you guys have probably heard of that one. I've written a couple of articles on it and had a podcast on it called The God Pill. But I like it because I can take that shit at like 6 a.m. and I can still like, you know, curl up for a nap at 2 p.m., feel good, get up, no crash, just keep being productive. And it's got a lot of neural anti-inflammatories in it and minerals, and it assists with the integrity of the blood-brain barrier. And it's got a lot of really cool properties that make me like that a lot more than modafinil. I mean, there are other things that I like too, right? Like just a little bit of lion's mane extract and coffee is a great one. An energizing strain of kratom is awesome. You know, so we were speaking of microdosing, like microdosing with Iboga or psilocybin or LSD. Those also, anything I've just mentioned, I like more than the effects almost like the side effects of modafinil, right? But I don't mind the productivity of modafinil. I just, again, I think there's better alternatives that might be less damaging to the body or that might allow you to sleep. So, I mean, if I got to be in Vegas for 2 days straight and stay up all night, I'll take something like modafinil, but usually I'll stay away from it.
And regarding the microdosing of the psilocybin, you said you've done this. Is that what are the effects of the small doses of psilocybin? Is it more of an awareness creativity thing?
No, that's more LSD.
Okay,
psilocybin is a little bit more awareness to vibrancy, color, texture, movement, hot, cold. You know, and so there are times you wouldn't want to do it. Right? Like I won't take psilocybin before a day of snowboarding, right? Like something like. You know, I don't want to sound like a drug addict, but, you know, eating an edible or doing just like a little bit of like a sativa THC is nice for a day of snowboarding. But with psilocybin, it's just like, oh, I'm so cold because you get really sensitized to the cold. But it's great for hiking. And honestly, it's like it kind of like turns you into a predator. I'm a little bit nervous about saying this on a podcast because I could get called out. But I've taken it when hunting because it's almost like turning yourself into like – the ultimate predator, like every aspect of your senses goes through the roof and you're just extremely aware. And again, not to the extent, you know, you don't take a dose that is the extent that would send you on a trip or have your tongue hanging out in your mouth seeing rainbows, but just a little bit, you know, for me, that's about 0.4 to 0.5 grams.
Okay.
I feel fantastic.
Yeah. Cause I've eaten mushrooms and, you know, I've done the McKenna heroic dose. I've never done it microdosing though. And that I was kind of wondering, like, what are the activities that are connected and correlated with microdosing psilocybin in terms of like a positive effect? So, like the hunting thing,
nature appreciation, hiking, hunting, sex, outdoors activities, like pretty much anything like in nature. It sounds kind of dumb, but it's like a mushroom. It's like a plant grows outside. See, there's some kind of like symbiotic connection between fungi and the rest of the planet, and it's almost like you become a part of that connection. Mm. It's really interesting.
Hey, Ben, just thinking on hunting, it's just really intriguing me. Like, where you live now, like, what is there to hunt in terms of the animal species?
Right around me, what I'll go after this year will be elk, white-tailed deer, quail, turkey. I will go down to Hawaii later on in the spring and hunt goat and sheep and more turkey and do some spearfishing down there. Usually I'll go to the high country in Colorado to hunt mule deer and also elk down there. So ultimately, though, it's relevant to me because next week is my hunting week, and I'll be probably getting a whitetail and an elk to fill the freezer with meat for the rest of the year.
So is that the only meat that you'll touch, meat that you've hunted yourself?
I want to know where it came from, how it was raised, whether it was raised ethically, what it ate. I mean, if I go to, I'm taking my wife on a date tonight, right? I'll go to the restaurant, I'll order like a grass-fed, grass-finished ribeye or whatever. And, you know, I'm fine as long as I know the animal wasn't abused and was ethically treated, ethically, you know, killed, and that it was raised without GMO corn or grain or whatever. But you know, ultimately, we've got about 8 raised garden beds. Like last night, right? For dinner, we had, fish that I fly fished and caught, and often I'll spear fish when we're in tropical places to get us food when we're in tropical locations. We had cucumbers and squash with a tomato garlic kind of dressing, like a marinade on top of that, and then fresh baked sourdough bread. Pretty much everything came from our backyard because we've got 12 chickens, we've got 7 goats, we've got 8 raised garden beds, and then we've got a cornucopia. Like I'm surrounded by 10 acres of forest where there's like, you know, plantain and yarrow and mint and nettle, which is one of the most nutritious leaves known to man. And so, yeah, I mean, like there's a bountiful amount of food to where when I'm home, I'm not on an airplane, which is the other half of my life. I pretty much eat right off the land.
It seems like with everything that you're doing, I mean, you started the show giving us some insights on your schedule just in the next 12 weeks. For most people, the average person, that sounds like a lifetime, man. So that's awesome in its own. But taking a step out of your life and in how you live it, kind of like keeping everything congruent with what you're eating, what you're doing, your fitness, it all goes hand in hand. Where do you see the collective, what's happening in America with nutrition, obesity, high blood pressure, et cetera, et cetera? where do you see, like, if we had to strip all of the problems down to, like, some simple mistakes that we're doing as people, where would you start at?
People like to be comfortable and they eat too damn much food.
So portions.
I mean, like, here's the deal. Like, I live my life with the following rules. A, I have to get cold every day. I don't think many people get cold every day. I take a 5-minute cold shower at the beginning and the end of every day because it's still good for the nervous system and for blood flow and for stress resilience. I have to sweat every day, which is great for detoxification, nitric oxide, and blood flow. It could be a sauna, workout, whatever. I have to breathe hard every day, meaning for at least 2 minutes I have to go anaerobic. So if I do nothing else, I'll at least do like 30 burpees. And then I have to do something that makes smoke come out my ears each day, meaning something that makes me think. Like today, after we finish, before I go on a date with my wife, I'll go to the Udemy app on my phone and go through a guitar course that I'm doing right now. I've got a guitar course and a harmonica course that I'm going through right now. And that's like kind of sort of outside my comfort zone. Makes my eyebrows furrow and gets my eyes crossed and makes smoke come out my ears a little bit when it comes to like building new brain cells. But I do things like that are mildly uncomfortable. Right now, what we're talking, I'm walking on a treadmill, right? I could be sitting down. That'd be more comfortable. Honestly, I'm not very comfortable right now trying to talk and walk at the same time, but I know this stuff is good for me. It keeps me in shape. It keeps me on top of my game, and it keeps me from you know, a slow, uncomfortable death or, you know, poor body composition. I think that's number one thing. When I say, you know, we say Americans, I would say a lot of people in a lot of industrialized countries, they have to have their air conditioning, and their heating, and their chair. And it's like, just get used to kind of like being mildly uncomfortable. It actually turns you into a more resilient human being. And then the other thing, you know, like every single day, I go 12 to 16 hours without eating. It's not that hard, right? I just, you know, if I get up at midnight to eat, I won't eat till noon. If I finish dinner at 7 p.m., I'll, you know, breakfast time can be between 7 a.m. or, you know, and 11 a.m. I just have those periods of time when I go without eating, and I allow myself to be hungry. I'm not afraid of hunger. You know, I finished a workout today at about 3 p.m. By the time I get to the restaurant with my wife tonight, we get on our date and stuff, it'll be like 8 p.m., right? So I won't have eaten for like 5 hours after a pretty hard workout. And I do stuff like that because I understand that when it comes to things like weight, chronic disease, and body composition, you know, as much as people would like to say it's fructose, it's glucose, it's excess protein, some people would say excess saturated fat, kind of depends on who you are and what your ancestry is and what your metabolism is. But ultimately, the biggest part of it is people just eat too much too often. So I would say be uncomfortable a little bit more and eat a little bit less, or at least space your meals far, farther apart so that you can tap into your own fatty acids as a fuel. And those would be, you know, two of the biggest things that come to mind right away.
Ben, I'm really intrigued by the cold showers, and I know a lot of our audience from our past kind of episodes have been as well, because people have mentioned it. You know, in terms of, you know, working up to 5 minutes, you know, that's pretty cool, man. How do we actually start, though, the process of actually getting in there, man?
So I have an underwater MP3 player. There's a company called H2O Audio that, like, waterproofs MP3 players. That is so much nicer. You can listen to an audiobook or a podcast and just kind of stand there. You can also ease yourself in by going from hot to cold. It's like a hot-cold contrast, meaning you can go 20 seconds hot, 10 seconds cold, 10 times through, right, which would be a 5-minute shower. And that's kind of cool because you actually get more vasodilation and vasoconstriction of blood vessels when you go back and forth like that. But the main thing is that what I tell people is you need to get yourself to the point where you could jump into a cold lake or a cold river or a cold pool or a cold bath and not have that like sucking in the air, that mammalian dive reflex. If you can do that, I guarantee your stress resilience, your heart rate variability, your ability to be able to tolerate discomfort in other areas of life will go through the roof. So that's like your litmus test, right? When you can walk into the cold shower, flip the tap on, have it be cold, and just stand there like it's just totally normal, then you have achieved. You've achieved nirvana, grasshopper. You're where you need to be from a nervous system standpoint.
Have you seen the documentary called Choke about Hicks and Gracie?
No, I don't really watch documentaries.
Yeah, this came out probably in the mid-90s. Well, do you know who Hickson is? Have you heard of Hicks and Gracie?
The jiu-jitsu guy.
Yeah, he was one of nine brothers, but early 90s that documentary came out, and he's doing exactly that. It documents him going to the mountains of Japan during the winter and standing in the river doing like Tai Chi and deep breathing techniques. And he talks about that. And you're starting to see in fitness, I mean, Tris and I are both strength coaches down here in Sydney. The industry is constantly evolving. I mean, whether it's fad dieting or fad exercises, whatever it may be. But through guys like yourself, you know, experimentation and research and figuring out what works for people and what works for ourselves, where do you see as a visionary where this industry is going in the next 5, maybe 10 years in terms of like coaching? And then also, do you see any like fads that are going to take off?
Yeah, in the fitness community, people are going to realize it's more than just the body. It's the mind and it's the spirit as well. You can't just squat, right? You need to add in squatting on unstable surfaces, single leg squatting, balance, vestibular training, visual training, auditory training, things that train your nervous system and your neuromuscular system just as your musculoskeletal system, in the same way that I do things each day to increase my neural drive or increase my amount of brain-derived neurotrophic factor to build new brain cells, right? So I think that idea that basically my rule is that I imagine like if I got hit by a bus and I were to lose my body to a certain extent, not be able to squat or press or lunge or run, would my mind still be able to really make me a very productive member of society? And so I think that caring for your mind is just as important as caring for your body. And then when we look at all the blue zones, the areas where there are a higher than normal number of centenarians, where people enjoy a lot of longevity, like Okinawa and Sardinia and the Seventh-day Adventists in California and all these different populations, we tend to see not really a whole lot of exercise, low-level physical activity all day long. We tend to see consumption of wild plants and tannin-rich beverages like teas or coffees or wines and all those things we kind of know. But, I mean, above all, we see, like, spiritual health, right? Love, relationships, gratitude, often a belief in some kind of a higher power. And so there's this idea that ultimately, you take away my body, and then let's say you take away my brain too, right? And, I get dementia or Alzheimer's or whatever. You still got happiness if you've got spiritual health, right? So I think where we're going to see our industry go is people try to achieve what it means to be an optimal human. We'll see more and more folks tap into not just being like that yogi who's really into the spiritual side of things, and not just being like that meathead lifter who doesn't ever go like play poker or play musical instruments or challenge their brain, the computer programmer or the video gamer who has a really sharp mind but doesn't take care of their body or their spirit. We'll see that the people who really want to optimize themselves pay attention to optimizing their mind, their body, and their spirit. That's what I think is going to be the next big game changer in the world of human optimization.
What's up, guys? Be sure to pick up your free copy of Conversations with Champions. This is our free ebook, which is comprised of inspirational quotes from past guests that we've had on the show.
Get inspirational quotes from champions such as Evander Holyfield, Jonathan Thurston, Grant Cardone, Gary Vee, Larry Holmes, Mario Andretti, Anthony Mundine, Joe DeFranco, and many, many more.
To pick up your free copy now, just simply go to our website, www.divisionboardpodcast.com/ebook. Put your name and email in the slot. It takes about 10 seconds, and we'll send you the book directly to your inbox. Now back to the show.
Yeah, just thinking on the body and mind, Ben, just you personally, a lot young, when you were younger, you were a bodybuilder. When you stopped being a bodybuilder, what were the biggest changes you felt both physically and mentally?
Didn't have to wear spandex and pose in front of the mirror quite as much. That was one thing.
Is that a bad thing?
Don't have full body cramps. And
you don't wear spandex anymore?
I can't anymore. Tuna with relish and ketchup for dinner every night. I didn't have to do that. Didn't have to shit out a straw anymore from all the protein shakes. Ultimately, ironically, a lot of people don't realize this. Your testosterone is tanked when you're bodybuilding because a lot of times you're on a very low fat, calorie restricted, overtrained type of scenario. So my testosterone and my sex drive increased. The amount of time I spent in the gym decreased. The amount of time I spent in nature went up. Felt better. A lot of my aches and pains went away. I shifted to mostly just doing like body weight stuff for a good 6 months after I quit bodybuilding, just in the park across the street from my house. Ultimately, from a hormonal standpoint, felt a lot better. From a libido standpoint, felt a lot better. I would say the only thing that I kind of missed from being a bodybuilder, honestly, is I was really fucking strong. right? Because I'm a little bit ectomorphic, and so I had to do a lot of full body lifting. So I did a lot of power lifting. I did a lot of work with the barbell. I did very little like isolated joint training or single joint training. And so because of that, I was like brute strong when I was a bodybuilder. And that's like one of the things that I kind of lost when I went through about 8 years of Ironman triathlon training. And really, it's one of the reasons I kind of got back into obstacle course racing was to get some of that strength back, because I just like to be strong. And so my strength went down a little bit, but ultimately my health went up.
So back to the, you know, I'm still fascinated with that hustle of the travel aspect. Tris and I will take the show on the road once, maybe twice a year, and I always bitch about having to fly from Sydney to LA or LA to New York. And it takes me like over 2 to 3 days to reacclimate to my body. And I'm drinking water constantly on the plane. I don't eat shit. I really take care of my body. But I just really haven't figured out that equation of how to be on it, like right off of the plane, like how to be able to like be a peak performer right off the plane. Do you have any insights or suggestions on that?
Yeah, I got a few I can throw your way. I just got back from Iceland, not last night, the night prior. First thing I do is I get outside in my bare feet, right? It's like pushing the reboot button on the human battery, because your electrical potential across your cell membranes gets all messed up when you're on an airplane. And the best way to fix that is to get on a grounding mat or an earthing mat, or go barefoot outside, or lay on your back outside. So I'll try and get in touch with the planet as fast as possible. And actually, when I'm traveling, I wear these sandals called Earth Runners that have like copper plugs in the bottom of them. So even if I can't be barefoot, as soon as my feet touch down on the ground, like I'm getting grounded. So I'm restoring the electrical potential. So that's one big thing is taking care of your body's electricity. And, you know, when I'm in a hotel room or whatever, I actually travel with these little things called they're called pulsed electromagnetic field devices, PEMF devices. There's one called the Delta Sleeper. There's one called the Earth Pulse. There's one called the Flex Pulse. They all do the same thing, basically. They just produce that same electromagnetic effect that the earth would produce if you were camping outside or walking outside barefoot. That's one thing that I do. Another thing would be light. So circadian rhythm, of course, gets a little bit messed up when you're traveling across time zones. So for example, on my desk here, I've got a set of glasses called retimer glasses that produce light from the greenish blue wave spectrum. And then I also have something called a human charger. And those are in-ear buds, because your ears have photoreceptors in them as well that respond to white light or blue light. And any time that you subject your retina or the inside of your ears to copious amounts of light, what happens is that sends your body a very strong signal that it is daytime, that morning has arrived. So in Iceland, for example, it is about 7 hours later. And so a lot of times I wake up. You know, if I come back from a country like that, like, you know, yesterday morning and this morning, I'll kind of wake up like pretty early, you know, 4:35, when usually I like to sleep until 6:30 or so. So what I do is I wait until the time that I would normally want to wake up, whether I'm traveling or whether I'm at home. And then I subject myself to copious amounts of light when I get to that point in the day where I really need to wake up. So light is one thing that jumpstarts your circadian rhythm. Sunlight is also really good if you don't have these fancy devices, but I like them because I can, like, you know, put them in and just like tool around my hotel room. And even if I don't have a chance to go outside, I can at least reset my circadian rhythm wherever I'm at. And on the flip side, if I'm arriving somewhere and it's evening, or if I've traveled somewhere, as soon as evening sets in, I shut off all my exposure to artificial light, right? So I wear blue light blocking glasses and I avoid looking at too many screens or, you know, go to malls or really bright places. So I avoid a lot of artificial light in the evenings. That helps out a ton. So another circadian cue is meal timing. And I will, when on the first day I arrive somewhere, that whole deal that I mentioned earlier about intermittent fasting, I'm kind of careful to ensure that doesn't go too late into the morning. Meaning that if I, let's say I get into New York City at 11 p.m., even if I get off the plane and I'm hungry, I'll just go to sleep and I'll take a lot of melatonin. Like I'll take 60 to 70 milligrams of melatonin when I first get to a place that's in a significantly different time zone, which is a lot of melatonin. To put that in perspective for you, the average capsule of melatonin contains anywhere from 0.3 to 3 milligrams, right? So So I'm taking enough melatonin to shut off pain from cancer. Like it's a lot of melatonin.
Wow. Yeah.
And I'll take that, but I'll go to bed, not have dinner. It's after dinner time in the place where I've gone to, because remember, meals are a circadian cue. And you don't want to eat off time wherever you're traveling. And then when breakfast time rolls around, then I'll have like a big breakfast. You know, again, sending my body that signal, hey, the day has arrived. It's morning in this time zone that you happen to be in. Now you have a meal. So that's another big one. And then the last one I would throw your way. And again, there are a ton of things you can do. I'll give you two more. One would be, when it comes to movement, my go-to workout when I'm traveling on the first day that I arrive is swimming. And the reason for that is the cold water exposure, the mammalian dive reflex, the vagus nerve activation, the fact that it's a little bit non-weight bearing, and sometimes your neuromuscular system is not super primed for deadlifts and squats, but swimming is just, it's almost like a combination of yoga, cardio, and that's like, I feel like $1 million if I'm able to swim, especially if I've traveled somewhere internationally. So I'll often try to select hotels that have like a good pool, you know, preferably without a lot of chlorine in it, or else, you know, somewhere near a body of water. And I always travel with goggles and in my underwater MP3 player so I can just hunt down water. And typically water is my go-to workout after a big travel bout. And then finally, I sleep a ton on the plane. I don't even watch movies on planes anymore. I travel with just, hopefully TSA isn't listening in. I travel with a little syringe of basically the equivalent of Rick Simpson oil, which is, you know, if you take a little grain of rice-sized portion of that, you're kind of dead to the world. So I will take that, a couple packets of reishi mushroom extract, which is like a relaxing mushroom extract, put on my binaural beats. So I've got like really good noise-blocking headphones and a really good eye mask, and I'll sleep for like 10 hours on a plane. And so whenever I get to where I'm going, like I don't like that whole rule about, oh, stay awake on the plane until you get where you're going, blah, blah, blah. I use the plane to just catch up on sleep. You know what? If I've slept 10 hours on a plane and I arrive somewhere and it's 11 p.m. where I arrive, I get to where I'm going, I take a little bit more Rick Simpson oil, and I go to bed. So I've got like, you know, 20 yeah. hours of sleep under my belt by the time I wake up wherever I'm at, and I feel like $1 million. So those are a few of the things that I do. I mean, I could probably go on for like 2 hours, all the ways you can mitigate the potentially unhealthy effects of travel. But I also, you know, I have a few pretty good jet lag napping and sleep articles over at BenGreenfieldFitness.com. And I've kind of expounded on a lot of this stuff in very great detail.
Yeah. What's the oil called again?
RSO, Rick Simpson oil.
Okay,
it's awesome. Basically like a really concentrate. It's a really concentrated form of primarily a ton of CBD, a little bit of THC, but it's a lot of CBD.
Okay,
Ben. Just thinking on sleep, just to wrap things up. You know, I've just heard you in other interviews just speak about, you know, having no blinds and also not waking up to an alarm. Can you just take us through a little bit of that?
That's funny, because when I got back from Iceland, my wife's alarm went off, and she doesn't usually set the alarm, which is weird. My wife was just like sleep till she wakes up, you know, so we can hear the roosters and the goats going off outside. But when the alarm went off, and I woke up, I was groggy, and I'm like, ugh, the alarm, because I'm not used to, I just don't like to wake myself out of whatever random sleep cycle that I happen to be in, via the use of an alarm. And they've actually done some really interesting research on alarms and how they make you more groggy for the first 3 hours of the day. They disrupt your sleep cycles. That's why so many companies are developing now alarms that will detect what phase of sleep that you're in. Wait until you're in that light phase of sleep, and you simply give the alarm a range, right? I want to wake up at some point between 6:30 and 6:50 a.m., and then it will wake you up when your sleep cycles are most favorable for that specific phase. The other thing that works really well is a sunrise alarm clock that will gradually produce light rather than just like a blaring alarm when you wake up. It'll gradually produce light. Those are a couple remedies that you can use. Now, granted, we live in an industrialized era in which we're exposed to lots of artificial light at night. You know, even in my own home, there are Kindles, there are iPhones, there are computer monitors, right? And so, because of that, even though some would argue that our ancestors slept with light from torches and the moon and the stars, I do have blackout curtains in the room because I'm simply exposed to more light than my ancestral biology likes in the evening. So I shut off all light at night. And then if I do need an alarm in the morning, I'll use the sunrise alarm clock or one of these things that will gradually wake you in the morning. You know, I have a Beddit device, for example, BEDDIT, for those very rare occasions when I have to use an alarm, like when I got to get up to go on a flight or something like that. It'll detect the sleep phases that I'm in. But ultimately, figuring out a way to gradually wake your body in the morning and figuring a way to shut off light as much as possible during the night is a really good idea. I also use a sleep mask when I sleep, like a really good like wraparound sleep mask. So I'm like a little sleep princess.
We appreciate the advice. Now we're just going to move on to a couple of personality questions to wrap things up. Johnny's got the first one.
Ben Greenfield, if three of your closest friends were sitting at a table and you weren't in the room, what sort of things would they be saying about you?
Smell nice. They wish they had my hair, my forehead of amazing hair. And I wonder what Ben has up his butt today. What would they say? They would say I am a demanding perfectionist, which I am. That's like a big weakness for me, but I just am. I'm a demanding perfectionist. I'm really like hard charging and productive. Like I don't sit around. Like I just can't sit. Like I gotta just be doing things and changing the world and getting things done all day long, right? So they probably say I'm a hard charging guy. I'm a perfectionistic asshole, and I'm creative. I talk about like music. You know, I just finished my first fiction book, my first fantasy fiction book. It's about a 500 page long, you know, story of dragons and knights and princesses and magic, and I like to draw. Play guitar and harmonica and ukulele and write songs. And, for a very long time, I would act every year in summer theater. And I was in a band until a few years ago. And so, yeah, I've also got a little bit of a creative side of me.
All right, Ben, final question. You're going to be hosting a private dinner party. You've got 5 invites. Now, only rules, no family or friends, but it can be anyone, dead or alive. Who would you like to invite?
I'm related to everybody famous, including Jesus, so I just can't answer. Okay, who would I invite? Theodore Roosevelt, Winston Churchill, Charlie Munger. Those are the first 3. Jesus Christ. That's 4. And then I need somebody really hot to round that off. Natalie Portman.
It's interesting that you actually you chose Charlie instead of Warren. Why did you choose Charlie instead of Warren?
Warren's just like a book nerd who invests. Charlie's like he's the brains behind the scene. Mm. He's got a lot of really good words of wisdom.
Yeah, I think people don't realize that, do they?
Theodore and Winston are just like they're men's men, right? They're just like these guys who are influential, and they were just real like hard, resilient men. And then Jesus was, in my opinion, the greatest spiritual leader who ever lived. And then you guys ever play a game like who would you do with your wife or your significant other, like celebrities you would do? For the longest time,
mine is on your list.
I don't watch movies. I don't watch movies or Hollywood anymore, so I don't even know. She's probably like old now, and wrinkled, and ugly. But it would have been Natalie Portman. So I'm just gonna say Natalie Portman.
I think she's still young, man. I've seen her in a movie. She's still looking good, bro.
Maybe that's our new personality round question, though, Ben. From now on the vision board, we'll ask who would you do.
who would you do? Yeah,
weird.
Very thought provoking. I like it.
Ben, before we let you leave, everyone get following Ben. He's www.bengreenfieldfitness. Got a brilliant podcast. Same name, Ben Greenfield Fitness. Twitter, you can find him, Ben Greenfield. Instagram, Ben Greenfield Fitness. Or Facebook's a little bit different, BG Fitness.
Ben, man, thanks for stopping by, brother. We appreciate you sharing the space with us, man.
Wait. Before I go, can you say this for me? Influential Spirulina.
Influential Spirulina.
You did it!
My man. Look, you just took me through a course like that.
And just took over the show, man. We appreciate you, man. We've been waiting to chat with you for a while, so thanks again.
Awesome. Thanks, bros.
Johnny, that was Ben Greenfield, man.
Yeah, man. Dude, the thing that's imprinted in my mind is when we talked about his upcoming schedule, He really makes me feel like I'm not doing anything. Jesus. He's going from town to town. Like this 40 seminar. Things, yeah. I'm sitting there looking at you. You're looking at me. And we're like, we need to step our game up.
I guess the man's in demand, right? So,
and it's good for the fitness industry. And, you know, guys like Ben Greenfield help push the industry forward, I think, in a positive direction when you see somebody that proactive in it for the right reasons. Developing himself.
He gets a lot of content away for free, man. When you think he's got his podcast, he writes every kind of day as well. You know, he's very active on his social medias. He's given away a lot, and that's something that a lot of people don't do. But, you know, we talk about Instagram models and shit, you know, just putting up pictures. And, you know, Ben Greenfield's the real deal.
I'm glad that you just said that, and it's something that we didn't even talk about bringing up. But I thought about it last night. I was thinking about the general public. What type of person puts their credit card details online because an Instagram coach looks good with their shirt off? Like, literally, I'm starting to see PTs or pseudo PTs online. Their funnel is a photo shoot and then sign up to my online coaching. And it's kind of grotesque in a bit, like unethical. Like, and then it's kind of comical. Like, I thought to myself last night when I was going through it, like, what person falls for that?
Well, I think it's unfortunately a phase in our life at the moment. I think it will phase out. Every
Joe D said it. Every 70 phase episodes ago
has a thing. I think it'll be around for another 5 years, and then people will realize that online training, it's good, but
it doesn't do anything.
It will never really replace a one-on-one or someone with an actual specialty. I think.
What are you achieving with an online coach?
Well, that's the thing. There's only so far that they can take you. Like, there's that. That bond between the coach and the person that literally isn't really there. And it's just like those, depending on how technical and their goals are, like maybe at bodybuilding level, it might be a little bit different because they're not really using
something more specific, like a pope.
They're using a lot of isolation exercises that might not need a specific technical sort of advancement. So, for example, I don't think a bodybuilder would be doing a lot of deadlifting or anything like that, or I'm assuming they're not going to be doing Olympic lifts or things like that. You know what I mean? Like,
it's hard for me to understand the mindset of a client. So, for instance, you know what I mean? Like, this scenario happened at the gym recently about, so you have a client and he wants a coach and he has one, or he's about to train with a new coach and the new coach will say $100, right? And he's going to pay that. And then another coach poaches that same client and charges 70.
Yeah.
The client, without even researching, investigating, asking questions, attaches quality to the number and totally disregards that it's $30 cheaper or whatever it is, and would go with the cheaper rate. That's hard for me to kind of fathom.
Yeah, it's like, it's a weird sort of industry. So, for example, if we're using Joe as an example, like, he's got his insider with Smitty, and that took those guys years and years, and they've just come out with a new bit on their little insider thing as well.
DeFranco.
It's fantastic. I mean, they've been doing this for like fucking years, bro.
There's no cutting corners.
Yeah, but then I feel that it's their place to do it because they've been around for so long. Like, there has to be some sort of mark. I've seen other people that have been in the industry for 1 year setting up similar sort of things, and you go, guys, I think you're kind of skipping.
You're cutting corners.
You're skipping something, and you're going to get found out eventually. And it's like, why don't you just learn how to be a good coach for a while? And then once you've done that, maybe after about 5 or 6 years, then you can bring it more to the masses. But I don't think in 1 or 2 years you can kind of say that you covered all bases. Do you know what I mean? Because obviously you're probably being online, it's going to be a lot cheaper. So for example, just say you're paying $20 a month to be part of this group. Yet the trainers in there might only have 2 or 3 years experience. I don't think that's enough experience to say that you've covered all bases, that you can answer every single question. That's the type of coach that I want, that, you know.
For sure.
That they can answer. They've had so much personal experience that they can know where your limitations lie. Because that's why you're essentially hiring them, right?
Problem solver.
Yeah.
It's interesting, too, that coming from a coaching perspective, that I don't know, something interesting is happening in our industry that people want to put on a pedestal, like, if you're a one-on-one coach, oh, I'm the online coach. And they almost are comparing the two, like, putting the name on your website as an online coach is better, or you're developing quicker rather than just a one-on-one coach. When did that happen?
Because it's become, you know, we spoke about it getting too easy to get into the industry.
Yeah.
Well, literally, there is no, if you're an online coach, there literally is no prerequisite on what you have to do, right? It's just like, oh, well, you just change your Instagram handle and you're an online coach.
Yeah, like,
it's some sort of regulation, right?
Or some sort of, hopefully that'll come one day, but also it's this weird holding like a medal in front of like your face, like, I do online coaching. It's like, dude, not every great coach wants to do online coaching for one. It's like, it shouldn't be. I don't want young coaches out there to think that that's like the evolutionary step. You do want, you know, if you want to be a great coach, you got to have the human experience. You have to have the human interaction. You have to put the time and you have to put the hours in. You have to have that one-on-one experience. And don't think, young coaches out there, that the next step of that is going online. And then if you don't get to that step, you're not developing. Do you know what I'm trying to say there?
Yeah, because it is a dangerous game. Like, someone that doesn't know what they're doing and does not have that personal experience trying to sell, because everyone's got different genetics. Someone might have great genetics, and it does not mean because they train well. Do you know what I mean? Someone can train shit and still get really good results.
Yeah.
That's just from great genetics. It can happen.
Yeah.
And you see it all the time. A lot of people on Instagram and these Facebook coaches, some of them aren't disclosing some of the things they do, or they just have great genetics and their ability to, because everyone's different, their ability to actually give those sort of results to someone else becomes lower and lower depending on how much experience and knowledge that they've got.
Yeah, I think it's important. I think the industry, there was an important figure who passed away a couple of weeks ago, Piana, and I didn't subscribe to what his school of thought was, but I did revere him in an aspect of, he spoke very openly about his drug use. He spoke very openly about his steroid use, and he had a really thriving business. But it's like, when you have guys who have these contracts and stand on a supplement label with a pseudo synthetic body, telling the young people that if they take this protein made from whey, they're going to get that body. I think that's unethical.
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, hopefully one day there'll be some guidelines or some standards, or maybe we'll be standing on the mountaintop and calling people out.
Who knows? I hope so, man. So I think it needs to be done
before
people stop wasting their money. All right, guys. Next on the show, we've got James Smith, the thinker.
The thinker.
So watch out for that. I wouldn't say it's an explosive episode, but, you know, he's quite opinionated and he's got his own way, and it makes you think a little bit. He's probably one of the most intelligent people I've ever spoken to, but it's quite an interesting episode. I think you'll really like it.
Very smart dude, James Smith, the thinker. There's a few out there. We got Diesel Strength James Smith, but the thinker, very visceral, very smart. Shout out to Mike G. Guadagno, very impressive strength coach in America. You know, he wanted us to get this guy on for a while.
James Smith, how many strength people, fitness, I reckon there must be at least 1,000 people
with that same name.
James Smith.
I wanted to ask the thinker if that was even his real name.
You should just change it.
He's so smart. I can just see him like, I don't want to be found out. I don't want people finding me. I'm going to just make the most vanilla name out there. Just go by James Smith.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, it makes sense. All right, guys. We'll check you next week.
Peace.
Welcome to the Vision Board Podcast. Stories of success from around the world.
You guys are scratching an itch, and that's why this podcast has become popular and successful, is because you guys are scratching an itch. You're enjoying it, and you're also benefiting from the knowledge that people are dropping.
I've never met the person in my life, including my parents, that was able to outwill me about me.
Whatever profession you're in, you need to keep working harder. You know, nothing comes easy these days, and, you know, you'll get knocked down, but get back up, that counts, so just keep working hard at it.
You know, you guys said you do stuff, you ask things that aren't Googleable. You guys are two for two.
There's never been a time in my life where anybody ever was able to tell me who I was more than I knew who I was.
To join our vision and follow the journey, please subscribe to the Vision Board Podcast via iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher.